Welcome to Car Free Conversations. I'm Domenico.
And I'm Sumitra.
And this is a podcast where we talk about how to make the best of St. Pete without needing to use your car. Today, we have Haley Bush on our call. We're doing a Zoom call today. And Haley, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? You are in urban planning.
Sure. Hi, it's great to be here. I am a St. Pete resident. I like to, depending on my audience, I say I'm a Florida native. There's a few of us, but we're here. I'm originally from Gainesville, but I've lived in St. Pete on and off for about 9 years now. I work for a statewide nonprofit organization, and we advocate for growth management, land use planning. So pretty close to the urban planning field. And that's what led me to find planning as a field and practice. And I'm excited to talk about that with you guys today.
And also, Haley is part of a Car-Free St. Pete committee with us. I just didn't want to forget to mention that.
Yes, I've been with the committee for, this is my second year.
Yay. Yeah. And Haley has been doing some really great work with the BPAC committee as well. And so thank you, Haley, for really spearheading that.
Good thing.
Well, we're going to have a little fun. We're going to start this out with a fun lightning round. Haley has not seen these questions. We're going to fire her with, I think we have seven sort of trivia questions. Haley, you're not expected to know these, but it's a bonus if you do. But this is just kind of a fun game that we thought we'd play this time before our normal part of our show.
Wait, don't tell me, right?
Yes.
Kind of like, wait, don't tell me, but we can't say that because that is probably trademarked by PR. So we don't have a catchy name like that. We just have, we just call it the lightning round. Okay. So I'll go with the first question.
Yes.
This is, Demetri actually came up with the question. Urban planning and design actually dates back to civilizations in 300 BCE. Can you name some of those civilizations?
When were the Romans around? Is that, like, I don't know my history. BC. Ooh, maybe Mesopotamia? Was there some, like, irrigation work done? Maybe that's, like, the first urban planning. Am I getting close?
You got one, yeah.
Okay. How many more? Three total?
Yeah. About four total.
Four total. What about the Egyptians and the pyramid building and the, like, sacred sites?
Yeah.
Am I getting close? Yes. I mean, I could stretch it and say, like, any built civilization, but that's not true because some just kind of popped up. I feel like the Mayan temples was, like, much older, so that doesn't sound right, but I'll throw it out there.
So I'm going to give you two more that we have listed here. The Indus Valley, Indus River Valley civilization, and then the Minnow, which I actually don't know what that is. I feel very bad about. Do you know, Sumitra?
The Indus Valley?
The Minnow Valley, yeah.
I don't know a lot about Minnowans either.
Okay, well, our listeners should Google that.
I mean, we could all Google now. Yeah,
I will Google that.
The second question. In 1950, there were two megacities in the world with a population of over 10 million people. How many megacities do we have now?
Ooh, I know China has, like, the biggest share of megacities, and I learned that little factoid. It was way more than I thought. I'm going to go with, we have 25 megacities.
You're close. 22.
That is really close.
Because, like, 15 of them are in China, I think. It's, like, this crazy proportion.
Probably, yeah. I think most of them are probably in Asia.
I think, well, I was just going to say, I think I'm sure it's, like, 15 in China, one in Japan, and then the rest in India.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's what I imagine. Over 65% of the world's population lives in urban areas, true or false? 55% and living in urban areas. So over half of the world's population live in urban
I'd say definitely over half when you put it that way. I would say yes, true.
areas. True, true, it's true.
Okay.
I wasn't shocked by that number.
And it's gonna get bigger. Like, I imagine.
I thought
I thought it
higher.
could be bigger. Yeah.
You have to, at some point, you just run out of things.
In 2009, Gainesville metropolitan area ranked seventh highest in the U.S. in percentage of commuters who biked to work. What do you think that number is?
Say the first part again, the
In
like how what
2000
percentage?
So in 2009, Gainesville metropolitan area ranked seventh highest in the U.S. in percentage of commuters who biked to work.
What's that figure? Yep, my US faculty like professors are gonna kill me if I get this wrong. Let's say it's pretty high for Florida, especially maybe 33%.
It's 3.3%.
Yeah, I know. I was like, I just threw that out there.
All right, I come up with this one. So I'm excited. The city of Seaside, Florida was the first fully designed new urbanist city built as, which is for those listening, new urbanism is a reaction against urban sprawl, right? In general. This meticulously planned city is now known as a sort of idyllic coastal town and was used as the setting of which Oscar-nominated film?
The Truman Show. Jim Carrey.
Yeah. All right. No, you didn't give me that hint. I was like, should I throw in Jim Carrey? Like, what's going to give me? But you already knew. So.
The great film. Everyone should watch it.
It's a really good film.
According to a St. Pete City ordinance, how long must a person be deceased before a street can be officially renamed or co-named after that person?
Oh, I have no idea, but that's a like cool fun fact to
That
be able to
is
pull out
an
in St.
amazing
Pete.
fact. Dom also came up with this one.
You know, and I'm like,
Do
I
you
can't
want
even
to
think of
guess?
let's
Do you
how about 15 years?
want
I don't know.
to... It's just 1 year.
What? Then why aren't there more city streets named after all these cool people?
Right.
My
Okay.
neighbor just trying to dedicate one of our streets to a civic leader, and he passed away just last year, and it hasn't been long.
Okay.
So
Wow.
no, it's 1 year. And then I came across it again recently when I was reading a Tampa Bay Times article. So
Wow.
that's a good question. Okay. This person authored The Life and Death of Great American Cities and pioneered the idea of a city as a living ecosystem that depended on mixed-use planning. What is that person's name?
That would be Jane Jacobs.
You got it. Yeah.
Yes.
This is a hard one, but she should. I feel like she knows it. I feel like
Yeah, I'm glad you included it 'cause we gotta boost her. That was good to include.
Yes.
Well, you got all of them, right? Oh no, she got.
The ancient cities,
She,
Minoan, the Minoan, we gotta look them up.
you got most. I think that's to me, that's a 7 out of 7.
Yes, absolutely.
You didn't have to get all of them. Yeah, and 25 is close enough. So that's a great score. I think you beat Evan's score from last podcast. Awesome.
Awesome.
All right. So now for the more serious part. What is urban planning?
You know, I've had a lot of time to think about this through the last 2 years in my urban planning program. I mean, that's like the first thing you get asked as a student because I think everyone brings a different perspective. So it's a very interdisciplinary field. I think a lot of people come to it through like the civil engineering, transportation engineering mindset, where it's like you're built like the built environment, a lot of math and that sort of like materials built environment background. But it's also a lot of public policy making and like civic engagement. because good planning should involve the community. So it's this really interesting intersection of all those areas where a planner has to have, I think the way it was described to me, you need to know a little about a lot of subjects. You don't have to be an expert in, say, stormwater or construction supplies, but you need to know a little bit about all of those things. So really, it's about your built environment. And I also like to think of it as like future-proofing. You know, you're, whether you're in an urban or rural area, you're urban planning, you're thinking about the future of a community.
That kind of makes sense. I like how you said that it's a little bit about a lot of about everything, because you ultimately need to know, your job is to know how they sort of come together, I feel, mm-hmm. right? Like stormwater isn't going to know how that's affecting transportation per se, but you,
right.
that's an urban planner's job. So that's a really cool way of thinking.
Yeah. And there's certainly like transportation planners or experts in housing planning. But I think even then, you need to know a lot about how local politics work. You can't be siloed off. You know, you have to understand fiscal policy, how the budget cycle, because your projects and how you weigh in on plans, you know, the behind the scenes stuff really depends on those areas. I think especially in Florida, climate change and resiliency planning, resiliency affects all different sectors, whether it's emergency management or disaster response. Or transportation planning. So yeah, you really have to know a little about a lot. I always confuse the two.
I was just going to bring up climate change and kind of resiliency planning, because, you know, as like the climate disasters that are, you know, are getting like so, that are getting worse, like by every minute, and, you know, and they put so much strain on like the infrastructure, but also like just social politics of a space. And so it's really interesting to me that like now, like urban planners have like this really big challenge of really coming up with good solutions very quickly.
Yeah, and to problems that we weren't even thinking about 10, 15 years ago. I mean, some folks might've been aware about increasing heat, people working in outdoor-based jobs, but I think it's Miami now has a chief heat officer or someone in charge of monitoring like the fluctuations in annual temperatures, what that means for the folks working in landscaping or any, you know, job that you predominantly spend your time outside, because then there's a human health implication. And so that requires some planning, because if, you know, you can't have folks working at peak heat times, are we shifting work hours to early and later in the day? And the logistical stuff comes into play there. Yeah, resilience or climate issues are really going to impact all different areas.
You also mentioned transportation infrastructure. Can you explain how planning plays a role in transportation?
Yeah, talk about logistics, right? Mm-hmm. So I had to take a transportation planning class as part of kind of your core classes in this planning degree. And the part I hadn't really considered, but it's like the transportation also includes the movement of goods. So it's not just, I always think of people in cars, because it's predominantly Florida, but it's also, we have to plan our infrastructure for people, but goods, whether that's by air, sea, or train, semi-trucks, freight trucks, you know, up and down our highways. So transportation infrastructure is a huge field. It's kind of, I give a lot of credit to people who dedicate their lives and their professions to just transportation planning, because it's really big picture, long term. And transportation infrastructure, like the materials, is expensive and kind of this cumbersome thing to explain to the public. So I think planners in that area have a bigger gap when it comes to like communicating what they're doing to the public, because the cost of concrete or how much a road costs per mile. It's just not something the average citizen thinks about. So transportation infrastructure, what specifically should we talk about? We probably spend 2 hours or more on this.
I actually want to ask about transportation infrastructure in the city. And there's a term, transit-oriented development. Can you tell us about what transit-oriented development is and how it can benefit a city?
Yeah, I think it's I wouldn't say newer term, but it's a more frequently used term in the planning world, probably the last, you know, couple decades. And so that side of transportation infrastructure more overlaps with our land use planning policy and housing policy. And so it's a style or a way of planning for issues like housing shortages, but doing it alongside transportation infrastructure. So in the case of St. Petersburg and kind of Pinellas County, we're talking about our bus system, lining it up with that form of transit. And we are all fans of the Sunrunner BRT system. Mm-hmm. I think has been a kickstart to the transit-oriented development conversation in St. Pete anyways. So it's really about prioritizing increased density, changing density to, or changing zoning to match your intended goal alongside a transit corridor. And I've seen a couple different ways of doing that. I'm more familiar with how St. Petersburg is doing that through an upzoning process. And so I know Car Free St. Pete has been watching this, but that means in some traditional neighborhoods, the properties immediately next to these future transit zone or corridors will see some increased density so that more people can live there. And we're not talking like massive skyscrapers, but more along the missing middle housing, which means maybe duplexes, quadplexes, more modest increases in density. That's transit-oriented development here in St. Pete, kind of in a nutshell. Well, it's related to land use.
So, Tamika, you attended a stretch a few weeks ago that we talked about where it was basically a meeting where they asked the public what kind of buildings would you want to see around one of the Sunrunner stops, right?
So yeah, it was
what should be developed there.
Right. Yeah, it was, you know, buildings, businesses, kind of what kind of businesses should, like, you know, get space like in these like transit corridors, right? And so, I mean, I think there were a couple of committee members there as well. And we obviously voted down like a gas station or, you know, like a car mechanic, because those aren't the businesses that support the transit, or right, like the transit oriented development that you are looking for.
Right. The idea is that you can use transit.
Right.
To do all of your.
Right. Or like, you know, all surface parking lots, right? Because like, you know, they take up so much space here in the city, and they're also like so bad for climate change or just like weather in general, because like you just have like this black asphalt that just gets hot, like in the summer.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see the results of the charrette process, because I think the great thing about that is if neighbors and people show up, they can really speak for their neighborhood, you know, and us Car Free St. Pete folks, we might, I would also agree, I don't want to see, you know, a gas station in my neighborhood, but perhaps some other businesses that particular neighborhood, depending on their demographics, that they want to see a certain type of store, you know, they have an opportunity to shape that. And so that's the beauty and kind of idyllic part of urban planning, but folks have to turn out for it, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I think the transit-oriented development also kind of propagates like more walking, you know, and kind of like just in general, like a less car dependent lifestyle. And I have seen that there is a shift in urban planning priorities in the US with focus on pedestrian and non-car centric infrastructure. Can you talk a little bit more about that and like why is this important?
Sure. I mean, you touched on it a moment ago, the importance in terms of climate and heat, right? So a more auto-centric, car-dependent community means more asphalt, more roads, more vehicles that are emitting CO2, mm-hmm. Burning fossil fuels. And then the size of our vehicles in the U.S., they're gigantic. So that's a lot of metals, even EVs, right? Electric vehicles. We're talking you're not emitting CO2, but there's some concerns and questions about the long-term sustainability of the batteries. So overall, in terms of climate, it's a really important goal to move away from just building more roads, widening lanes, making more parking lots, right? So that's like, I think of it kind of in two ways. That's the climate reason. The other one being a real public health and safety concern with pedestrian safety. And so in urban areas, metro areas like St. Petersburg, Pinellas County, You know, we're growing. We're one of the most dense, if not the densest, county in Florida. So more people next to more roadways results, unfortunately, in more auto crashes, traffic fatalities, whether it's auto on auto or auto and pedestrian and cyclists. So, you know, when the CDC, when your National Health Agency declares traffic violence one of the leading, you know, unintentional causes of death for an American, I think we need to wake up and recognize that as just, you know, equally concerning as climate change, if not more so, you know, in some cases. So, yeah.
The benefits of big infrastructure projects, you know, like huge, you know, bridge rebuilds or whatever, they're really not visible right away. It takes time to see how successful a project is. How do planners measure the success of some of these large scale developments?
Gosh, that's one that I and planners who've been in the field probably three times as long as are still, I would guess, still figuring out, because there are multiple ways of measuring success, and a transportation planner would probably have a much better answer than what I can offer. But from what I've learned, there are a couple different ways of measuring success. You can look at it from a safety perspective, which I kind of talked about. And so literally just crash rate incidents at an intersection, or pedestrian cyclist crashes. So just kind of quantifying the number of incidents, maybe by police reports. Mm-hmm. And then there's this concept called level of service. And I know Florida DOT has used this, the Department of Transportation has used this metric. I think this, the National Department of Transportation as well. It's kind of this, it's much more focused on how many cars are we moving through a roadway, quantifying, you know, trip length, number of vehicles moving through a roadway. And it's really about like kind of command and control quantity, level of service. What is the road's level of service? You'll hear that, and there'll be different letter grades. So that's a common metric, but unfortunately it excludes non-car users, right? It excludes anyone in transit. Generally it's an engineering method. Exactly. It doesn't account for other multimodal, you know, ways of getting around. Other measurements of success, I'm still thinking through what I'm trying to pull from my transportation planning class. We talked about safety. I think for the average person, we really think about it in terms of traffic congestion, like what we see as folks who do drive cars. This road is crap at 5 o'clock to six. I can't get across the bridge to Tampa. From a transportation planner or engineer's perspective, though, they're not just looking at that roadway between 5 and 6 o'clock on Thursday, Friday afternoon. They're also looking at it at maybe 11 a.m. on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Perhaps it's like significantly less traffic on the road. So there's a lot of different measurements and kind of time of day considerations, number of cars moved. And so I think that's what makes transportation planning kind of tricky, is it's a lot of different factors at play. And then there's also a way of measuring the other one is accessibility. So thinking about destinations in terms of how accessible they are, is it only or strictly accessible by car? You know, is it one of the type of like you get off the interstate and that's like the main road to get to a destination? How does someone walking access that spot? Accessibility in terms of who owns a car? Do they have access to a car? Do they have a driver's license? I think that's something CarFree St. Pete has really honed in on in the St. Pete area. Believe it or not, there are many people who don't have access to a car. I think for a big population of, you know, middle-class America, we forget that. And that I think that's a narrative that should be put out there, is like, let's talk about car ownership and then car user rate, you know, and the cost of owning a car. So accessibility, I'm getting back. That's another metric for transportation planners.
Can you think of any good examples of urban planning in St. Pete?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a couple of them come up, and CarFree St. Pete folks, we know these. I think the Sunrunner is the big, you know, sexy one to talk about. Yeah. And it will be measuring that for years to come, right? We can't, right. I think to be fair, we have to say it's only been not even a year. October will be a year, mm-hmm. One full year, and look at the long-term use of it. I think overall though, it's a victory because our local government and our county government and the funding that came through, we were able to make it happen. And that's not going to go away anytime soon. Like, we have a bus rapid transit line, one of the few in Florida. So that's a big win worth celebrating. And I think usership will just increase. Ridership will just increase. Another one, though, is the more pedestrian and cyclist oriented work that our city is doing. I think we've got a great planning staff, transportation planning staff who really care and they know this city in and out. So I, Sumitra, you mentioned in the beginning that I'm on the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory mm-hmm. Committee, the BPAC, yeah. And that's a citizen committee that we were appointed to sit on. This committee that meets once a month and hear from our city planners. It's more of like an updating citizens on what the city is doing. And so I've learned a lot about neighborhood greenways, the bike share program, new projects, new crosswalks, curb bulb outs, new bike lanes, like all of the things. My vocabulary is expanding being in that committee. So it's more of the little, like, less exciting things to talk about among your peers, but that are really important. And if you are a biker or walker in the city of St. Petersburg, you start to pick up on it. You might not, like, we have someone visiting us from out of town, and they go downtown and they're like, this wasn't what I was expecting in Florida, you know? And I'm like, well, yeah. what do you see? Talk to me, right? And it's because we can wake up and walk downtown, get our espresso, get our pastry, and visit these awesome local businesses that St. Petersburg has. So it's like, there's probably a technical term for like the low stakes infrastructure, right? Of bicycle pedestrian planning.
Yeah, I also feel like, you know, we only look at kind of like big picture, sexy new projects when it comes to transportation. But I think a lot of transportation is so local. And, you know, that kind of those local segments all connect together to make like the bigger picture. And I think it's really important to talk about those just local developments that are happening around the city.
Let's also not forget how we've been gifted with a pretty good grid system.
Right.
I think that's something transportation planning, like a city planning success, because other cities in Florida don't have as good of a grid. I mean, even you just go over the base.
Yeah. Other Miami, cities in the county.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Miami does have a pretty good grid system as well. It's very confusing though.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Let's talk about, Dimitri, do you have any questions?
Yes. As St. Pete grows, what changes in urban planning would you like to see in the city to accommodate for growth and challenges that may come with it?
Yeah, as the city grows and, you know, we're increasing our tax base, more people here. I think we really need to talk about increased funding. That's whether it's equitable to the amount of new people coming here, or this is a little bit beyond my expertise, but we need more funding for these projects that we're talking about, mm-hmm. the less sexy stuff, the stuff that I think that there's a disconnect between how much transportation projects can cost, how much of it is such a process of like matched funds, right, between
right.
county and city and state and sometimes federal government. So, you know, what changes would I like to see? Increased funding, perhaps more consistent, higher funding for projects like Complete Streets program. And specifically, you know, that's on the city side, what I'd like to see the city commit to. And I think we've got an administration, council members in the mayor's office that are open to that. I don't think there's any, we haven't experienced any opposition. No pushback really from that priority. I think it's a priority shared by our leadership. I think the challenge actually really is educating our citizens, our you know, neighbors about like connecting the dots between the cool features about walkable St. Petersburg we like and saying, okay, let's expand that, right? Let's see that. Let's connect South St. Pete, better connect South St. Pete, mm-hmm. really. We've got interstate spurs that, you know, policy of the past, racist policies that divided our community. Let's undo some of that. Let's see what we can do. And so really just pushing for more faster, right? More funding, more money, let's go. But realities are that, you know, there's a lot of conflicting priorities. So.
And also, thanks, Dom. And also, you know, like PSDA needs more funding too from the local age, like just local city and county governments as well, right? And I think so that they can just do more with the fleet that they have, and you know, have more.
Yeah. Yep. You said as St. Pete grows, so I like to have you. If we're talking county government and county leadership, I think we could expand, become car-free Pinellas. But yes, I think what I would ask of St. Pete would be different than what I'd ask county leaders. You know, PSTA needs our support across the county. Yeah. It's expensive to live in St. Petersburg. Let's be real. We know that, you know, and so people who live outside Pinellas or outside of the city in northern Pinellas County and perhaps work or play in St. Pete, right? They need to have consistent and good transit options to get downtown. Mm-hmm.
And I think the part of the question that we started out with as St. Pete grows is so key, right? Because you mentioned we need more funding faster. And I think a lot of people are turned off by that idea because they see a lot happening around them. A lot of developers are coming in and things are going up quickly. But I think what is important to remember is that St. Pete is growing very quickly. And if the city doesn't keep up and provide the citizens with the necessary infrastructure, it's going to be harder for people like us to live here. And, you know, like people that have been here are going to have to, like you said, move further away and you'll be disconnected from the places that they love. So that's what I think what you said is important, that the city needs to get funding quickly and get things moving, really only because we just need to catch up because development has been just, I think, too fast for
I think that's a good point about especially like people who've lived in St. Pete for decades, because I see this in my neighborhood. We're it's an older neighborhood with people who've been here for many, many years, and just scaring folks with new development and taking away parking spots, right? That's a big fear. And I was humbled in a conversation with my grandfather about this very thing. So I think this is where planners really have to be able to think about everyone that they're planning for, not just us young hip people who love to like scooter, bike, walk around. You know, there are folks with mobility challenges and it's hot in St. Pete. So in reality, we do need parking downtown, right? It's just a matter of, can we create a system where perhaps it's a temporary spot, a drop-off zone? There are creative alternatives to parking and we just need to work on it. And there's transit, and that's the big, let's convince everyone to ride the bus more often.
And also transit can be inclusive, right? And I think that's something that people miss quite often, because I know when I talk about transit, people always ask, but what about people who may have mobility challenges? And I was like, you know, like the transit can be inclusive to accommodate for everyone.
Right. Just give it a try, right? Like,
All right. Let me ask you our last question, and this is an important one, and it is, how can engaged residents of St. Pete be part of the planning process? If so much is going on, how do people get involved if they want to be a part of that?
Yeah, instead of the like token response of just show up to meetings, which is important, it is important. I think instead, what I've learned in St. Petersburg is our council members, at least for the past few administrations, really care, and they're about specific projects and specific areas of their district. And so what I mean by that is, I think have a meeting, whether it's a phone call or an in-person meeting with your council member, and talk to them about the specific, and like down to the intersection and like 500 feet of sidewalk, right, that you're talking about. And odds are most of the time they will know that area and they might not be aware of the issue. So being very specific with your concerns or requests when you go to council members, I think that's what I would recommend in terms of get involved in the planning process. And then the next step to that is hopefully if you're listening to this podcast, you're aware of Car Free St. Pete now, join a neighborhood group or an advocacy group. I'd plug Car Free St. Pete because our voices get amplified when there's more of us. The CONA, which stands for the Council of Neighborhood Associations, right? That's another good one to get involved with as well. So that would be like my second recommendation.
Well, and remember, if you live in St. Pete and you live in a neighborhood, and if you live in a neighborhood, there's probably a neighborhood association that you can reach out to.
Right.
And if there isn't a neighborhood association, if there isn't somebody you can reach out to, there probably is an established neighborhood association, and you could probably bring people together to talk about
and,
it.
And
they have some power. The neighborhood associations do have, you know, the city council.
They do.
And some of the neighborhood associations could be dormant, and you can, if you have the initiative and time, you could, you know, restart your own neighborhood association with people from your neighborhood.
Yep.
Haley, I know you're currently pursuing your master's in urban planning at the University of Florida. What made you interested in studying planning?
Yeah, I mentioned at the beginning that I'm a Florida native. And so I grew up in Central Florida, Gainesville area, swimming in the freshwater springs and nature girl. I explored a lot of kind of rural, you know, inland Florida. And so started out as environmental. That was my passion, still is. And that's what I pursued in undergrad. And then through undergrad and through my work in my first job, I learned what I now believe the best way to save Florida, whether it's our water, our land, our wildlife, is through growth management and planning. Right. So it really was a found degree for me. I didn't know that you could be a planner. That was something new. So it's really the built environment and the policy shaping how we grow, because the ultimate evil being urban sprawl. And I saw a lot of that in kind of inland Florida, you know, old citrus groves and farmland turning into subdivisions. And so that's how I decided to be a planner. And University of Florida has some excellent faculty members. They allowed me to, I'm a part-time student. I can work remotely while studying. So that's why I chose urban planning. And if you want to, you know, shout out, plug, if you want to look at that program, talk to me. I'll tell you all about it.
I did look it up, actually.
Oh, are you gonna do it for me?
No. I have a terminal degree. I'm nowhere ready to go back to school.
Terminal degree.
Yes. Well, if you change your mind.
It has been lovely having you on our show, Haley. I've learned a lot, and I hope our listeners have learned a lot. This is all very important stuff, like St. Pete growing, and there needs to be some intention, right? With the way things are happening. So thank you for all of it.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Haley. And also for the listeners who do listen to us, thank you for listening to us and, you know, like keep looking for newer episodes. I also want to just send a, you know, just kind of talk to people who haven't listened to an episode yet. We, you know, we talk about such important and local things that like they are so beneficial to all of us. So please, please listen to us.